Okay, just making sure the equipment works. Like I told the pastors this morning, I wasn't real nervous then, but it all starts about the time I'm going to get up here a little before. I feel the most comfortable sitting across the table or around the table with a group of people having discussion with interaction. Me standing in front giving you information is not energizing at all to me. It's very depleting. So, I want to be faithful in what I've committed to do. I struggled a little bit with knowing how to present the information this morning. I've got a lot of information, and those of you who know me know that I like to put lots of detail behind every piece of information I have. But we wouldn't have got very far if that was the case today. So there's some things that I will be mentioning. You may say, where did you come up with that? And I don't mind at all if you ask me later about it. Another thing is I like messages that are presented where you take a passage and you unpack that to the least little bit part. But today I'm going to be more on a subject type of a thing, which is going to jump around and use some passages here and there, but also use some other things. The other thing is I want to say is some of this stuff, some of you are going to say that sounds like a lot of psychology. Psychology is that of a study of the brain, of how God has made us. It depends on how we use it as to whether it's right or it's wrong. If we put the workings of psychology and all of that above the scriptures, and the scriptures takes a back seat, that becomes wrong. But if we use psychology to know how to minister to people with God's word, then is when we use it correctly. So I will agree there's going to be a lot of things you're going to say, now that comes from psychology. I'm not going to debate that. I'm not going to deny that. I'm going to admit that. So starting out first I got to figure out for sure how to make this thing work. There we go. Do I have to hold this and point it anywhere, or do I just push the button? Okay, that's what I thought, just making sure. I thought if I was supposed to be pointing it somewhere, I wanted to know where to point it. So, okay. Back in October, Leighton shared a message. And in that message, he made mention of the room of grace that Elsie and I have been studying in a course called Building Blocks for Relationship. And so we were studying that, and I was sharing with the pastor some of what I was learning, and he mentioned that. And after he mentioned that, he came to me after the service and asked whether I would share more about that with the church. And so I was going to share on just the room of grace, but the more I got into it, I felt that possibly an overview of the curriculum we were studying called Building Blocks for Relationship would be beneficial to you as well. And so I've decided to share an overview. We will get into the Room of Grace partway through. Another thing I want to do is I want to give credit to the fact that this book, the book that you see the picture there of, was developed by Haven of Hope. And so I want to give credit to them. Also, I want to give credit to the fact that some of the material that I will be sharing is also from Caring for the Heart Ministries, which if some of you know, that's John Regeer's, what he's been heading up and been teaching. Also, keep my slides up here so I keep my notes up. This material is what's used for Haven of Hope and Grace Haven as a follow-up actually for other Caring for the Heart ministries as well. There's a group been established in Ohio for some time, in Pennsylvania, one in Michigan more recently, and in Indiana it is still very new. This material, if after today you say, I would like to know more about this material, or you feel it would be useful, there are several ways that you can join in on this information and use it in your life in a group setting. First of all, a requirement to join this, one of these groups, these courses, is you have to have either attended a Two Hearts, One Flame, or been to Grace Haven, Haven of Hope, or basically any Caring for the Heart ministry where they've used those materials. It's coordinated by Haven of Hope. Haven of Hope has a website, and if you go to Grace Haven, you'll click into that, but it will go to a coordinator at Haven of Hope. But it's on their website. You can click into Building Blocks for Relationship. And when you do that and fill in the information, it will take you to Haven of Hope, who coordinates that. But then also there's a local organizer in our area. I think we've got one established. It wasn't quite there last I knew, but there was a couple committed, but they had still not gone through the training or even done a course. Okay. The other thing as I want to do is I want to say that as I go through this morning, there's much of the material was taken from the course, but it's not verbatim. There are things in there that are my thoughts as well. So I don't want you to take this here and say, this is what Haven of Hope says. You know, it's still my message to you. Okay. Enough of all of that. Just to bring you up to that point. I want to start off with a passage of Scripture. If you want to turn to Galatians 5, verse 16, and I will be reading out of the ESV, but I've got a question that I ask myself. Why is it that in many Christian homes, some of the works of the flesh are so prevalent? I also want to say that I'm going to be referring to this in relationship as a married relationship, but these principles can be applied to a father and a son, mother, daughter, parents to children, even to others, you know, with your friends like that. So it's not something unique. But it's just that what the book is written towards is towards couples. So that's why I refer to homes. And so often in our homes, we run into things, and the home that I grew up in the home that I created, there's times when there's the works of the flesh are so prevalent. And we can try so hard, and you would think as Christians, you could just plain switch that. But there are some things that we need to understand about the way we as people are made that helps us understand why those things take place the way they are. So Paul here, he talks about we're just going to read it. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other, to keep you from doing the things you want to do. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh See, I should have pushed this ahead because some of you don't have the ESV, and so you can't follow along as well. Sorry about that. Verse 19 there. Now, the works of the flesh are evident: sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, reveling, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like this, like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. And those things belong to Christ. And those who belong to Christ have crucified the flesh with the passions and desires. So sometimes in homes you'll see things like anger was the way it was the home that I grew up in. Dissension, division, a lot of strife. We would have said we weren't enemies, but there might have been some enemies at times. Sometimes I see these in couples that I relate with, that there's enmity there. And the list could go on. And then, you know, we see the fruit of the Spirit, you know, we see a lack of joy, a lack of peace, a lack of, you know, long-suffering and those type of things. In Ephesians, Paul talks about the fact that a godly marriage is a mirror or example of the church and Christ. And so should not that be what people see when they look in on our relationships? The other thing is relationship, as Ephesians talks about there, it talks in a way of oneness. And I realize that within this congregation, one this size, there are homes and there are relationships that are broken. That what I share today might be somewhat triggering. It may also be somewhat where you may say, how's this going to work in our relationship? And I want to say that I acknowledge that. And so, as I shared earlier, you know, about the two hearts, one flame, that's something that I think would be beneficial for every couple. But sometimes we need to step into an intensive. And sometimes that intensive, like a couple that we've met with one group already, and with that, they really need someone to walk with them long term. And so I'm just saying that you can't just take this here and say, well, okay, this is the fix for what's going on. But I really think it'd be beneficial to each one of you in some way or another. I have a little illustration here, and I want to talk about oneness a little bit before I go into the rest of it. But in life, we have two people, and we operate somewhat as two people. But yet, God wants us to become one as a team. And for that to happen, we both have to have soft and pliable hearts. And this morning I went to the cupboard. Now let's see if I can even get it out of here. I went to the cupboard and I got some Play-Doh. And it was so hard. It needed to be softened Sometimes we're at that point where God needs to soften our hearts for us to be pliable. But then again, if we have two people who continue to work totally separate, there is no oneness. If you want oneness, you need to work on your relationship. And if I would work this, I probably can't, but if I'd work this the whole way through the service, I would dare you to separate them into blues and whites. I mean, blues and pinks. When you have a separation in relationship, and I don't care whether it's a divorce or just plain a separation where you walk away from your commitment, you always leave a part of you in with the other person. You will never be the same. Our relationships, we get married, like with Conrad and Ayanna, are still looking pretty much like this. But when you go to Elsie in my life, I'm not sure sometimes we know where one of us starts and the other one ends. And that doesn't just happen. That happens by intentionality. Both of us entered our relationship with a certain amount of emotional woundedness. And out of that emotional woundedness, I was wounded much worse than what Elsie was. I brought a whole lot more baggage into our relationship than what Elsie ever did. But because we allow the other person to affect our lives and change our lives, today when you look at us, you'll say, well, that's Kermit and Elsie. And you will not see the arrogant, proud, boastful man that Elsie first met when I came to Sunny Haven and she said she'll never date that boy. I'm not sure if that's exact words. But 35 years of God working in my life and me allowing her life to sanctify me has changed me to who you see today. So enough for the illustration of Play-Doh. Maybe the kids want to play with it later or whatever, but just an illustration. I'm going to next go into some of the things of the course. Normally in a relationship, what we see is we see the reactions between, like me and Elsie, there's reactions there. And we see those reactions. Often we try to change those reactions. Either I will step away and do something different to keep that conflict from happening again. And as I move away, it moves away from relationship. And that is me. I move away from things like that. So what that does is I'm trying to protect something within me, and we will get to that. The other thing that can happen is because of a desire for that situation to leave, she may approach me, moving towards me and pursuing that situation. And so those are the reactions. You may say, well, I'm never going to do that again, or I'm going to do this, but we're dealing with reactions. And inside those reactions is where the struggle becomes. Inside those reactions, you have things like unmet expectations. Every one of us as a child dreams of growing up. A boy dreams of growing up, and I mean, he's going to be a fireman, or he's going to be a pilot, or, you know, the list goes on. Maybe he's going to be a school teacher, an engineer, you know, whatever. And we have those dreams. But in those dreams, we see a lady coming along with us in those dreams, and we seek a companion. Girls think of growing up, marrying someone, entering into a relationship that's protected and guarded and is a place where they want children and they grow up children. And I know I'm stereotyping, but that's sort of what falls inside those expectations. Along with those expectations are conflicts that happened in your past, and those are never going to be in your relationship. The other thing that happens is there's things that you see as very good and right in your relationship. And you say, those are going to be part of my relationship. But do you realize you marry someone else who grows up and says, this is not going to be a part of my relationship, and this is going to be a part of my relationship? And those expectations many times are unmet. And inside those unmet expectations is where the conflict and reaction happen. I was going to use an example, but I'll just stick with it because I've got enough here to cover. Also, there's past painful experiences. Those affect how we view other people. You view your father in a certain way because of who he was. You view your mother who she was. You look at her that way. We often take those painful experiences that we've had with them. Maybe it's with church leaders. That's one that I struggled with. In fact, pastors here know that. Back when things happened with Aaron the way they did, there were some very painful things. In fact, I was so much in growing up, and much that way all along, if a pastor asked to talk to you personally, I shied away. I was like, what's he want now? Because my experiences were always, they came with some form of a correction that did not feel comfortable at all. So sometimes that's the way we view people. That is the way we view people as we have grown up. I talked a little bit about avoiders and pursuers in every one of us. In every one of our relationships, we're either an avoider or a pursuer. Sometimes you have two avoiders, which means that they avoid conflict. They move off and they do their own thing, maybe work or whatever, and they go there. But loneliness brings them back together eventually, but they tend to live separate lives. You also have the two pursuers, which come together, and usually it either ends up in an argument or a fight or some real passionate working together to make oneness. But we're still pursuers. We also have the situation where one is a pursuer and one is an avoider. And when an avoider like me avoids, I've experienced this in other areas than marriage, but probably some there too. But when something happens, I avoid. I will avoid. What happens when the pursuer comes after you? When you're avoiding and you have a pursuer, it keeps on going. That is exactly what I see happening in relationships. And there has to be some way of stopping those actions from happening. And it has to be an intentional one. Family of origin. This here, here we have, I grew up in the Whistler Church. She grew up in the, I'm not sure exactly, Amish Mennonite. I'm not sure exactly what you call it. Something like that. They're different. And we come together. Probably an illustration I do want to use is Matthew and Lisa Jacobson. They're a couple that grew up in a Muslim family, not a Orthodox one, just a traditional one. And he becomes a Christian and he meets Lisa and they get married. And in their relationship, there was this dynamic of two, and I won't go into all the details, but that dynamic is more diverse than what you'll probably find here, but it's still, our family of origin affects the way we approach life and enters right into those reactions that we're talking about. Also, there's patterns of life. The way that you or I, I skipped one there. I didn't see that. Extrovert, introvert. I got one example for that. I'm more of an introvert. Elsie's more of an extrovert. Last weekend, We had an invitation away Friday evening. We were both excited about that evening. Come Saturday evening, we had an invitation, and when we got that invitation earlier in the week, I was excited about that too. But when it came on Saturday night, I was like, I'm not sure I want another night away. And come Sunday afternoon, she's talking about doing something in the evening, maybe having somebody over or something like that. And we got an invitation that evening to go away. And I'm like, really? Yeah, we need to be sociable. We need to be friends. Yes, we will. And we did. But about 8:30, I was ready to go home. So we left the party early. I deplete energy when I'm with people. She gains energy with people. Different, but not wrong. But it enters in the conflict, in the reactions that we have. Patterns of life, the way we do things, some people like me, I like quality time, physical touch, all of that. Elsie likes a little more distance. She'll sit on the love seat and spend time reading or that type of thing. Different, but not wrong, but can still enter in reactions. Okay, moving on. I think I'm going to have to move more quickly than that. Okay, inside reactions, and most of this material here comes directly from the book. Reactions are something that happens within about 30 seconds. From the time I say something till Elsie does something, or she says something and I do something, or even do something, takes us about 30 seconds to react. We need to slow that down, and we'll talk about that. These are either unhealthy or sometimes right out sinful acts. It could just be an unhealthy response, but sometimes we sin in our reactions. This is a place where the enemy strongholds and previous attachments where we act upon them. And again, referencing back to things from the past. Core reactions, bitterness, hypocrisy, pride. You've got overt and you've got hidden pride. Sexual immorality, rebellion, temporal values, anger, emotional detachment, dominance and control. And we do those things to protect our hearts. I just won't say anything more on that. I was going to do more, but there's four needs that every one of us in conflict or reaction is looking for. We're looking to know that we are safe. We look to know that we're loved. We want to know whether we're enough. In other words, whether we're satisfying, whether the person is happy with us or okay with us. We also want to know, do we really matter? Or are we just pushed aside and not doesn't really matter? So those are reactions, and I will get to, when I get closer to the end, I will put each one of these here, and I'm just describing different parts right now. Experiences. In life, these are the ones where we experience things, and often we experience most of our character and our development happens within the first 25 years of life. The closer we are to young, the more formative things that happen in our life are. In fact, we've been reading some material recently that talks about the fact that the joy center of a child is developed within the first 2 years of life. We also know that before school age, a lot of our character is already developed. And we also know that throughout teenage years, things that happen are very dramatic. So in the early part of our life is where development happens. So we talk about life experiences. We talk about pressure patterns. We talk about trauma that have damaged our hearts These events are not our choosing. I want to be very clear about that. These are things that we did not choose. They happened to us. But yet we do something with what happens to us. These experiences include repeated happenings, but repeated happenings, in other words, things that happen over and over again that should not have happened. Also, it's emotional needs that were not met. We often find that with a child who is, you know, maybe who's adopted, and they're passed from foster home to foster home. They get adopted in early childhood. There's still a lot of things that were not there that should have been there that actually are part of their ongoing life. These experiences are the catalyst that leads us to emotional wounding, feelings, destructive thoughts, which are lies and strongholds, and reactions, sinful or unhealthy behavior. With each life experience or pressure pattern, trauma, identify the primary source. That's one thing that we try and do when we go through the course is also, you know, not only say, well, you know, this happened or this happened, identify where that happened, because it's important. You know, like I said earlier, if it happens from a church leader, it's going to view how you look at church leaders. If it happened from your mother, it's going to view how you view your wife. It's going to, if it's your dad, how you view your husband, you know, those types of things. It affects how you view God. Yeah, there's just a lot of things in there that you need to identify that. Now here, there's, as far as examples of life experiences, pressure patterns, trauma, I listed some of them here. It's not all of them, but expectations and pressure. I lived with a father who was very much performance-based, lots of pressure, lots of expectations, and as a youth, I felt like I didn't meet any of them. Again, I want to say, I'm not saying these things about my family to try to degrade them. They're part of my life story, and God has sovereignly put those things in my life for my development. Even those things that are wrong are not there for you to blame them for their mistakes. It's there to develop you into who you are. That's even whether it's your spouse or not. One of the most sanctifying things God has done in my life is gave me Elsie. I mean, that's just the way life is. And then he gives us children. And that is what he uses to develop us. So this is not a way of pointing back and saying, well, it's all their fault. No, you're never a victim. You have a choice. Dominance and control. Again, I experienced that. Highly expressive. That would be someone who's often is that of anger is a highly expressive way. There's a lot goes into that. If you want to unpack that, we can unpack that some other time. Self-focus. Sometimes you have a parent that is very self-focused, and things revolve around them. That affects the way you experience life, especially if you happen to marry a self-focused person. You have anger, critical, judged. You have spiritual abuse, sexual abuse, and physical abuse. Don't think we need to go into a whole lot of explanation on that. Under feelings, again, I want to point out that that feelings is not something you choose. You feel what you feel because of what happened. These are things that are there. We choose what we do with them, but we don't choose them. So when you go into feelings, we look at core emotions. We look at deep feelings of emotional pain that are a result of life experiences. These feelings spur us toward destructive thoughts. These pain words we feel strongest stand out and reveal our core emotion of pain. We need our spouse to accept, understand, and care for these core emotional pains. I've heard men say about their wives, well, they're just exaggerating, or they're too emotional, or I don't know what to do with their emotion. I mean, you can go on. You've heard comments, I'm sure, too. We need to understand to be empathetic of those feelings and woundedness of the other person. I'm going to list some words here. The list is long if you get into it, but I'm going to list the ones that I felt as a teenager in early 20s. I felt blamed. I felt fearful. I felt alone. I felt like a failure. I felt condemned. I felt all was my fault. Unaccepted, confused, not valued. I felt discouraged. Discounted, unheard, misunderstood. And some of you may say, well, you know, that's just a teenager. But when it affects you to the point where you would rather die than live, it's more than just a teenager. I'm going to go into destructive thoughts. Now, destructive thoughts are things you choose. Now, you may have been a teenager not thought about the fact you were choosing, but they're really what you choose. Their thoughts are lies that are a result of that pain. The enemy uses emotional pain to ensnare, infiltrate, and hijack our thought life. These destructive thoughts are lies become the starting place of the enemy strongholds. In other words, the enemy builds strongholds around the things you believe about yourself. Some of those are lies, and some of those are just plain unhealthy thoughts that are destructive. It's a starting place for the enemy to build a stronghold. Attachments. We attach to, sinful things. We attach to, the list could go on, the things that we put in there to self-soothe that we attach to. That attack our self-worth, our identity, and our standing with God. Many a person, including myself, at one point, and even sometimes today, can live in this thing of where you do something and you then feel guilty, you feel shame, you feel worthless, and you're not sure that you even understand you're standing with God. There's times when it can be that pronounced. And these propel us to react. And we react to protect our own selves. Examples over here, again, there are too many. They're unique per person. But I'm going to list the ones that... Oh, by the way, each of these blocks are things that we fill in the book in what is called the journey of our heart, where we journey back to where we started those things, where those things generate from. And so these are mine from my journey of the heart. What I do is never good enough. Is that true? No. But that's what I tell myself whenever I'm in a point where I've done something that's not up to standard, or I've done something wrong, even when I've done something sinful of my own choosing. I say, well, I'm never good enough. I can't. Or I say, what I think or have to say doesn't matter. Someone doesn't value what I say. I say, well, what I say doesn't matter. Does it or doesn't it? It does. It's a lie. It's destructive. I will never get it right. I'm afraid to even try. I'm inferior to others. I will be rejected if I'm honest. That's a big lie, a big destructive thought that controls. Or the one like this, things are just confusing. Nobody cares about me. Why? Okay, so those are the boxes. Now I'm going to move ahead. This here's something that we look at, and can you read that? I hope my colors are working. Okay, I have two sides, and not that I'm prejudiced to one color or the other, you know, it's just gaining the two sides, and you'll see as we go through, I split it into two sides. But you see how we've got reactions at the bottom and reactions at the top. There's a whole lot goes into those reactions that we never consider in those 30 seconds between the time when Elsie asked me a when question and I feel trapped. It takes about 30 seconds. So, we have to slow it down. In between there, what drives that reaction is the fact that I've experienced things in the past that either I was to be done on a certain time or I've committed to a certain time and I've missed that. So I tend to make it way out here where I'm going to for sure achieve. But that's not always beneficial either. So that reaction, and that's just one example. I could go to many of them. Inside that comes an experience. That comes the feeling of failure. I'm just using my own. Comes the feeling of failure and the destructive thoughts that it doesn't matter. Why even try? I mean, the list can go on. So out of that causes a reaction. My reaction triggers an experience in her life, and you'd be surprised how many times you sit down with someone and you lay it out and you can see exactly what's going on in the reaction. What I do automatically triggers an experience in her life, which triggers a feeling, which triggers a thought, which triggers a reaction. And thus we have the spin cycle. Room of grace. I'm going to talk about the room of grace yet. Well, I've got one more room to talk about as well. But inside the room of grace is where we go to God and we have conversations about those feelings. The first thing we need to do is we have to acknowledge that it happened. Sometimes, even in our subconscious, we block out the things that have happened in our life because it's too painful. We need to acknowledge it. The other thing is sometimes we hang on to our own experiences as if they are the model. We need to acknowledge and just bring them out that these are my experiences. We also need to understand purpose in them. Like I said, that, you know, those things that happened to me developed me to who I am today. There's purpose. God allowed it for a purpose. Even if it was wrong and even if it was a failure, there's purpose. We need to forgive. Forgiveness is for me. Forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is for me. Forgiveness is me letting the other person go and not controlling them, not demanding from them. Out of that forgiveness, though, I take the pain I think I get to this later. I might be getting ahead of myself. I am. We'll just go over it slightly there. But I actually take that pain on when I forgive somebody else. But God never intended for us to carry that pain. He wants us to take it to Him. And out of that, He will give us joy. He will give us love. He will give us peace. And we will get into that later. But forgiveness is for me. Forgiveness is to set me free. Apology is what we do to the other person. We do that. I do that for Elsie. Apology is for her, to release her. And we can get, I'm not going to get into that now. Might not get into it at all. I don't think I will. Our feelings. Again, we have to acknowledge them. We have to seek to understand a purpose. We need to give them to God. Those hurtful things we need to take to God. He's told us that we're supposed to bring our burdens and our cares to Him. We're to give them to Him. We need to take those to the foot of the cross. And we have to seek comfort from Him. That's where the peace comes from and like that. Destructive thoughts, again, you have to acknowledge them. We have to understand the stronghold. There's things in my life that I had that I went to over and over and over again. In my teenage years, there was a lot of immorality. I went there over and over and over again. We need to understand those as strongholds. Those aren't just failures. That's just not something that happened. That's a stronghold that Satan has in our life. We need to confess those. If they're lies, we have to be honest about it. We need to confess those to God inside the conversations with Him. We have to find constructive thoughts. Find the honesty to the lie. And we have to seek cleansing. Reactions, once again, we need to acknowledge them. We need to confess them. We need to seek cleansing inside the relationship with God. God often responds to us inside there. He will respond with either a song, a hymn. Sometimes it's a Bible verse. It's a Bible story. Maybe it's a mental word picture. Maybe it's feelings and emotions, peace, a calm, truthful thoughts. Tells us the truth about who we are and who He is. God desires an intimate relationship with us. In John 10, 27 through 30, He likens us to sheep and a shepherd. And we've had messages here, I'm not going to go into it, but you understand, you know, how the shepherd, when he leaves the sheep, and you can read the Psalms and you can understand a shepherd. In Revelations to the church of Laodicea, he says, he calls them, invites them to relationship. He says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and eat with him and he with me. The one who conquers, I will grant to sit with me on my throne as I also conquered and sat down at with my Father on his throne." Romans 8, 12 through 17. Paul tells us we can talk to him as our Father. And I'm not going to read that. I see I'm going on. You can read that yourself. But in there, he refers to the fact of in verse 14 there, it's 15, of Abba Father. We can call to him and talk to him as our Father. He's wanting a relationship with us. And that is the room of grace is the relationship with God that we can live out of. When we are clear with God and have a relationship with God, then we can live out of that. Moving on to the the words of blessing. The proverb writer says that death and life are in the power of the tongue, meaning that with what we say, it doesn't mean we physically kill someone, but there's an emotional damage that's done. Jay Stringer, in his book Unwanted, quotes Harville Hendrix, who says, "We were born in relationship, we were wounded in relationship, and we can heal in relationship." Too often, I like to leave, move away. I need to remember that I need to heal within relationship. There's no way that I will heal a relationship. If I've got a relationship issue with James, there's no way I'm going to heal that thing by going down the road to another church so that I don't have to see him again. That relationship is, that healing takes place inside relationship. So, when I avoid Elsie, I'm not moving into relationship. To speak words of blessing to our spouse, we need to first have our heart connected with God. We need to have a relationship with Him. That's why we need to go to the room of grace first. Too often we go to reacting to our spouse. We need to go to the room of grace first and have those conversations with God. Once we're connected with God, then we have the grace to love our spouse as Christ loved the church. Christ calls us to love. It says in Ephesians, it calls the husband to love as Christ loved the church. We can't do that if we don't have the connection with Him right. If we're still tied up in hurts and reactions, we need to go to the room of grace first. We need to discover our spouse's story. Something is absolute. You need to understand what has shaped your spouse. I need to understand Elsie's story. She needs to understand my story. Because if we don't know that, there's no way that we can minister words of blessing. We will be talking about things that will bless us, and it doesn't do anything for them. There are many ways we can affirm their hearts. We need to ask questions around the feelings and what they're thinking. That reveals their heart to us. Too often we want to tell them what we think they're thinking. We want to tell them. But we need to ask and be curious and ask. I've told people this. I'll tell you this. We need to ask and listen with an interest to understand, not to answer. Us men like to fix. So we like to listen to fix. We need to listen to understand. We need to speak affirmative words into their destructive thoughts. The lies, the things they believe about themselves are not true. We need to be the one who's speaking truth into those, affirming them. Also in their feelings, the painful feelings. We need to speak comfort. We need to care for their heart. Here's where I said I got ahead of myself, you know, the fact that our apology needs to acknowledge. No, that isn't. Okay. Yeah, this is where I've got a comment here, but yeah, I won't go into that. But yeah, our apologies need to acknowledge the pain that we've caused. Too often we like to say, well, you realize you did something wrong. You say, well, I'm sorry I did that. That's doing nothing besides trying to take me off the hook. The real thing is is when I can say that I am sorry I, whatever I did, and it made you feel this way. Now I'm identifying with her. Too often the sorry is just, nah, okay, it's over, get out of the way. We need to identify with that. We need to ask her how we can care for her heart better in the future. This is where I had gotten ahead of myself. We need to understand that when we ask them for forgiveness, we're asking them to take the pain. Now, God has provided something for them to do with the pain. But you need to understand that when your spouse releases you and forgives you, they are picking up that pain. Okay. The next slide, this slide here is a slide which we call the spin cycle. And you're going to notice at the top of the brown side, you can choose whether you're brown or whether you're magenta, but anyways, we use the male side as the brown side there. We see that what we have is we have experiences, we have feelings, we have destructive thoughts, and then we have reactions. I've already explained that to you. And how our reactions touch the experience of our spouse, which generate feelings, which generate thoughts, which generate reactions, which again does the same thing. That's a spin cycle. In the center, you're going to see the room of grace and the words of blessing. That's where we want to go, but I wanted you to see the spin cycle. Many people live on the outside circle and never move to the center. They never develop oneness. They never develop intimacy because they're on the outside circle, and it feels a little bit like being on the outside of a merry-go-round with some big person spinning it, and you're just a first grader. If you can imagine that. That's how our lives feel. Moving into the next slide, you're going to note that box down there that it says the reactions. The reaction is replaced with the Holy Spirit filled response. This is the point that we, in the course, and I think we need to, every one of us in our lives, we need to back up and say, I'm going to back up. One thing I forgot on the last slide. When we go through this course, there's no thing of starting at one particular point like experiences. We look at the thing, look at each one, and we say, okay, what is it that you recognize? Often, one person will say, well, I'm feeling this. Another one will say, I'm thinking this. That's where you start. Maybe you have no idea what you're thinking or you're feeling, but you do know what the reactions are. So you start there. But you start to unpack and say, why am I reacting the way I'm reacting? So in this one here, we've got the reactions missing. We're trying to back up from the reaction and say, okay, this was the sinful thing I did, or this was the reaction that I did, the unhealthy thing that I did. And backing up and saying, what was I thinking? What was I feeling? Whichever one it is, and moving into the room of grace where you go in and you have conversations with God. And we've talked about that. I won't go back into that. And then you see on the other side, you have the words of blessing and the Holy Spirit filled response, where we now feed into the emotions and the destructive thoughts of our spouse. Spirit filled responses, not reactions. And for any of those that think it only works on the brown side, I put a slide in here for the pink slide or the magenta slide as well. It doesn't matter. Whoever it is that realizes that there's a spin cycle going on is the one to stop the spin cycle. Now, what we will do in the course is we actually have physical spin cycles. And from 1 week to the next, we will fill out. And yes, Elsie and I have spin cycles too. We fill out the spin cycle. What was our reaction? What was our thoughts? What's our feelings? We fill that all out. And maybe we resolve it, or maybe we take it to the meeting and have the rest of the people help us resolve it. But a spin cycle needs to be resolved, or it will continue to spin, and it adds spin to spin to spin. So, with that, I'm ready to close. I'm done. I presented it. But I want to say that if there's any part of this that you would like to unpack further, let me know. I would be willing to share another message in February if there's interest. And if I do that, I want to share in something that would be beneficial to you. Another thing that I would do if I shared another message is I would actually put together primarily spin cycles. And they would be spin cycles that are real to real people so that you can see how it works and how it backs up. And Elsie's and mine would probably be some of those in there. Just to, because that's the most real to us. Anyhow, so that's all I have. I'm going to turn it back to Jake to close how he sees fit. Any corrections that are needed, I'm going to let him do that.